By now, you'll have heard or seen that I'm working with a new golf app called Tangent, who are also sponsoring this show. It's the smartest AI caddy in golf and is able to recommend not only clubs to hit, but target locations based on the math behind strokes gained and your own personal shot patterns. Unlike many other shot trackers, it also takes into account and adjusts for hazards that are out there. It has sensorless tracking with an amazing automatic swing detection that you can use with your Apple Watch or your phone without any need to buy any attachments for your clubs. And my favorite part, the post-round analysis data helps you immediately see where you can improve and gives you simple breakdowns that you can dive into if you want much more detail about your stats. It then links this data to recommendations and actual practice drills that you can use to improve. Getting measurable data for both on-course and practice drills makes Tangent one of the best game improvement ecosystems that I've ever seen. So download Tangent for free on the Apple App Store or at tangent.golf and use promo code SWEET30, that's SWEET30, for 30% off. So you'll get a free trial, and if you like it and want to continue, it'll give you 30% off a subscription. So just try it out, play a few rounds with it, and I know you'll love it. So that's Tangent, T-A-N-G-E-N-T, and enter code SWEET30. John and I have just got an amazing set of clothing from Roback, our show sponsor. We have polos that are perfect for golf, and they have the best collar in the game as they don't lose their shape, making you look crisp and sharp on the golf course. They've got a great stretch performance fabric that fits much better than boxy polos, and they even have some really fun designs. Or if you're like me, you'll go for more of the classic solids. The quarter zips are super soft and really easy to swing and move in, and their golf hoodies are perfect for on and off the course too. John and I are huge fans, so make sure to get yourself some amazing golf clothing and support our sponsors. Head to roback.com, spelled R-H-O-B-A-C-K.com, to get 20% off your first purchase through the end of the week using code SWEET. The link is in the show notes. So that's roback.com, spelled R-H-O-B-A-C-K.com.
Welcome back to another episode of The Sweet Spot. This is John Sherman from the Foundations of Golf. And as always, I'm joined by
Adam from Adamy on Golf.
See what I did there?
What did you do?
You didn't notice it, did you? I said Foundations of Golf instead of Practical Golf.
Instead of Foundations of Golf.
I've been like, I don't know. I've been thinking recently, I'm like, why do I even say Practical Golf? I'm more involved in the Foundations of Golf with the books now. I think that's my brand, if I have one. So anyway, that's my official change, everyone. There, the earth just stopped. So today we're going to talk about a favorite topic amongst listeners, swing speed. Before we get into it with our guests, Adam, you've had some incredible breakthroughs. Adam's been sending me some photos of his swing speed. What's going on over there?
Oh, you can't stand near me anymore. If you do, you're frightened of getting sucked in by the vortex I produce by my swing speed right now. Yeah, I've gone from a paltry, I probably dipped below 99 mile an hour recently, which is horrible. I've never been a fast swinger of the club. I've been doing the stack. I think it's a combination because, interestingly, I haven't been as consistent with the stack as I should be, and Sasha has told me off about that. And my stack numbers aren't going up as much, but my swing speed is going up, which is more important, right? Sometimes you see the opposite. You see players with their speed training goes up, but it doesn't translate to the real golf club. I'm seeing the reverse. Some of that is actually, I've changed my rhythm a little bit, my tempo, and it came from watching, is it Jake Knapp?
Yeah, Jake Knapp. He just won.
Like the smoothest 125 mile an hour swing ever. And I was like, you know, I've been kind of sucked into this swing it back as fast as you can thing. And it never really hit with me. It never really has made my swing speed go up. So I was just watching Knapp and I said, you know, let's try that smoother rhythm that just has a bunch of speed at the bottom. And I noticed a small little increase in my speed. I was like, okay, let's keep going after this. And then I was watching more swings. I was looking at like Freddie Couples. And even last night, I was looking at Tiger when he was in his younger days. And I was like, that's the rhythm that I'm trying to do there. That's the tempo that I'm trying to do. It almost looks like the speed is after the golf ball, which is kind of going against some of the more modern philosophy. So I'm not saying that, swing it back fast doesn't work for everybody. I've seen that work for some people. I know Cordy Walker, right, with Golf Science Lab, he had a huge increase with that. But for me, this new Jake Knapp style rhythm, I'm
Jake
going
Knapp.
back to that. Yeah.
So you got up to like, you've been hitting like 110 and over 110, right?
Yeah, exactly. It almost feels like a little pause at the top. It's not, but it feels like a little pause at the top. And then from there, I feel like I can just completely reverse the momentum of the club and swing my body as fast as I want. And yeah, I hit 113 the other day, which is unheard of for me, unless I'm doing something really stupid. I've got there before, but I literally injured myself doing it. This is more like my regular swing getting to 113. So I'm pleased. I'm excited to see where it goes. Let's just say that.
Nice. So I think we'll get into some of these things. So let's introduce our guest. His name is Alex Ehlert. Did I screw it up, Alex? I was asking him before we recorded.
You nailed it.
Okay, I was going to say Alex Ehlert as a guest, but it's Alex Ehlert. Why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners, your expertise and what you do, and some of the research you've done on swing speed?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, first of all. Been following along with both your work for a long time, so it's great to hop on a sweet spot. But background, I'm a lifelong golfer. I pretty much was swinging a club from the time I was walking. Wanted to be a professional, played Division I golf, and that's about as far as I kind of made it in the competitive game. I was always a very short hitter off the tee, which I'm sure we'll talk about. I kind of used myself as a test subject for a long time of how to swing faster. Probably made a lot of mistakes along the way, but I eventually kind of decided the best route was probably to go the academic route and research and working with golfers rather than trying to be one myself. And I've always been interested in kind of dissecting elite human performance. So I went on to an exercise physiology master's and then eventually a PhD in human movement sciences. And a lot of my research for a long time wasn't golf related. It was more broader sports science, exercise science, applied physiology. But I always, whenever I got the chance to kind of bring golf into what I was doing, I would. There's not a lot of like structured golf performance research outside of a few biomechanics labs in the US. So it was kind of trying to work it into what I do whenever I could and started working with some golfers and then decided to start just putting out educational social media. I was never a big social media person and golf just kind of gave me an avenue to put some info out there. Then I was in an academic role and got hooked up with a few other researchers in the golf kind of strength and conditioning and performance space and been doing research with them, even though I've kind of left to work more of a applied industry job in the sports science space with Xtrfly, but I still try to stay involved with golf as much as I can. And one of my big recent interests has been speed training. One, because I was a short hitter through most of my career as a competitive career. And then two, I find it to be a really interesting kind of bridge between the physical side and the technical side. And sometimes we create like this massive gap between those two areas, but with speed training, there's both kind of a physical and technical or skill component, and where they come together is this kind of interesting blend.
Cool. So yeah, I followed you on Twitter for a while. You've shared some interesting studies there, and eventually I was like, well, we got to get this guy on the podcast. So we're gonna, with the allotted time we have today, I'm sure we can make this a 10-part series, but we're gonna try and go through, I guess, some of the big takeaways from your research. Let's start with swing speed as a trainable skill. I think anyone who took up golf over 15 or 20 years ago, it wasn't even spoken about. It's just kind of like you had it or you didn't. And if you did, great. If you didn't, well, sorry, can't do anything for you. And now I think the modern golfer, we look at swing speed as a skill, no different than speed control on the greens or club face control. It's something you can get better at. So give us like the 40,000 foot view of what it takes to swing faster and the different methods that contribute to that.
Yeah, sure. I think this is a good point to start with because I was definitely told as a young junior golfer that I was slow. I didn't hit it far, so I should focus on hitting it straight. And I got pretty good at hitting fairways, but I was losing. Strokes gained wasn't really popular back then or a thing, but I knew I was losing strokes to my competition just because they were hitting it 50 yards by me in some cases in the college game. And then I started playing around with methods to actually increase it and increase my prize swing speed in the ballpark of like 8 to 10 miles an hour over a couple of years. And then much more recently, now that I know what I'm doing, much more than that in a relatively short period of time. And you realize every movement, when you start to get into kind of the science of how the body works, is a skill in its own context. Even in kind of the strength and conditioning fitness world, we often don't think about our exercises as kind of a skill. But even with like something as simple as how much weight can you lift in a squat, there's a lot of research now showing that just practicing lifting heavy weights, even if the volume is very low, like not even enough to cause massive changes in your actual kind of muscle size or physiology, there's a skill to lifting heavy weights effectively. And everything is the same. And swing speed, especially when you think about all that goes into swinging a club fast while maintaining control, but the amount of degrees of freedom involved with swinging a golf club effectively, there's definitely a skill component to one, swinging a club effectively in first place, but definitely to swing at the speeds that some people are swinging, and even faster than you normally do. There's a large skill component to learning to do that. There's probably a lot that goes into it. I consider swing speed kind of a motor learning or motor control skill that's underpinned by some of the physical components that we talk about with training, both with speed training, but also with kind of gym-based training as well.
So there's the muscle size component of it, you know, actually growing the size of your engine, I suppose. And then there's the neuromuscular part of it. So I see that as like the electrical component, the how much juice is getting into that engine. Is that what you're defining as skill in these terms? Or
I almost think of skill as everything is a skill, and the nervous system controls everything, first off, in terms of what our movement goal is. And then we have to try to organize the movements of all of these different muscles and joints. And then the nervous system is what actually communicates with that raw kind of machinery to move our joints through whatever range of motion with the right amounts at the right times, in the right directions. And so swinging a golf club is very technical. We know that. We're very quick to recognize how much skill is involved with hitting a pitch shot or hitting a wedge shot from 130 yards to 10 feet. But oftentimes we kind of ignore the fact that swinging a golf club 120 miles per hour while controlling the angle of the face within a few degrees. Sometimes that's almost considered just this like brute force, the bomb and gouge, when really it's a very fine-tuned skill. And it's kind of a complex interaction between a lot of stuff going on with how your body moves, how much force you can generate and how quickly you can generate it, but also how you can coordinate all of these movement pieces together. But that's why it's kind of this interesting topic and much more complex than I think a lot of people will give it credit for.
What are the general methods that people can go towards? Like, everyone wants to increase their speed, and there's strength training, mobility, explosiveness work, like the med ball throws, jumping. There's the speed sticks, obviously, that have become very popular. Technique. Are those all the options available to golfers? Like, what's your list of things if someone wants to say like, oh, I'm stuck at X miles per hour. Like, what are all my options here? And which ones do I choose? Because I think that's where people get confused.
Yeah. So I want to kind of start with a kind of a basic. I often like kind of describe swing speed as a function of your neuromuscular potential. And by that, I mean, as simply as, can you move into specific positions in terms of mobility or range of motion? Can your muscles contract and generate the force needed to move in a certain way or to speed up the club? So the actual ability to move the way you want to move, which is going to be more the physical piece, and then the skill of using that within the context of the golf swing. And so we all know that there's going to be people that are very muscular, very powerful, but they don't swing a club effectively. They don't swing it fast. And that's not anything against the physical contribution. It's just that you have to be able to use that potential within this very specific skill of the golf swing. On the other side, there's people that may not appear super strong, super fit, but they can swing a golf club 115, 120 plus miles an hour. And they may have enough of what they need, and they've developed a really effective movement pattern and a really well established skill of swinging that club very efficiently with what they have. And so the optimal is obviously having a bit of both, is having kind of the ability to generate force very quickly and in large amounts, move into ranges of motion that are kind of advantageous from a biomechanical standpoint. But you just have to also be able to swing efficiently and swing effectively. And that's always going to be an important piece. So it's not as simple as just do this exercise in the gym and swing faster. That's going to maybe raise your ceiling for how fast you can swing, but you ultimately have to learn to use that in the swing itself. But there's also ways of, you can improve technique, you can improve use speed training. We can talk about some of my thoughts on how that actually works and some of the ways it can benefit golfers in terms of speed. But at the same time, you may run into a ceiling then of, I can swing up to 115 miles per hour, but at some point I may need to get stronger. But a big piece of it too is the physical part is complementary, but it may also just help with an overall robustness of the body to be able to tolerate the loading that people are putting through with really fast swings. And one of my concerns is that people are getting very excited about speed training and they're ramping up and swinging fast hundreds of times per week because it's addictive to see the speed number go up. And so a lot of what I'm focused on is, let's build a system of being smart about ramping up that volume and basically using these pieces at the right times and the right amounts.
Something that really interests me is the mechanical advantages you talk about. So I am very interested in technique and, you know, what things you can change, movement, position wise, forces, torques that can increase club head speed. Actually, I was thinking about this the other day because I was looking at this 15-year-old kid who has like a 120, 125 swing speed, and he's just a string bean. He's probably about 100 pounds. I'm looking at it going, I hate you so much.
How?
Why? Why? Like, yeah. Why can I not do that? And so, you know, obviously I can look at his technique and see certain things that are happening, but I'd love to hear you talk about what you could do position-wise, forces, torques, things like that, that can help increase swing speed.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that it's frustrating to see someone that's young, very small, but then their swing just allows them to swing it at a very fast speed. And myself, I'm not very large. I'm like 5'8", 165 pounds. So I've always been kind of battling against.
Oh, welcome to the club. You're in good company here. We're all around the same height.
Yes. So I definitely don't have the lever advantage that some people have when they're 6'4" and can naturally kind of create that width. I've gotten the chance to talk to a lot of kind of people that experts in the field with, like Steve Furlonger, and I've picked Martin Borgmeyer's brain a little bit, and Lee Cox, and kind of seeing what they see with the technique side, and have experimented quite a bit. But I mean, if you kind of go to Sasha McKenzie's work, I like that as kind of a framework of understanding the mechanics of swinging fast, in terms of, you can kind of, the amount of work you perform on the club is going to ultimately dictate both linear and angular. It's going to dictate pretty much the club head speed that's achieved, because there's a few different forces that are placed on the club, but the most important to actually change your speed is the forces applied from the body and the work you perform on the club. And he kind of talks about his research found that from a linear work perspective, which was a strong predictor of speed, you can increase the distance your hands move through in the downswing, or you can increase the average force that you're applying along that hand path, or some combination of both. So that kind of gives a nice clean framework to work from. If I can change some sort of movement pattern that creates more distance that I can kind of accelerate the club through, or I can apply more force through that downswing while also sequencing things efficiently so that the energy and momentum is transferring up through the body and out to the club in time, then that kind of gives sort of basic framework. And then within that, there's a lot of things you can do in terms of dynamic shifts off the ball from kind of P1 to P4. There's definitely a lot of sequencing when we talk about leading with the hips and kind of proximal to distal sequencing. There's all sorts of different kind of levers you can try to pull. But Adam, as I've heard you talk about plenty, there's probably no one solution. This is the key mechanical factor for swinging faster. It's going to be finding what works best with your swing, your body. And a lot of the physical side is that if you are very fit and you kind of remove any sort of constraints on your movement, whether it's mobility or you have the ability to rotate very quickly or generate a lot of force into the ground, it just gives you kind of options that you can try to use as an opportunity within your swing. And so you still have to learn how to kind of apply that in a way that makes sense for your swing.
Let's talk about fitness training, because you mentioned like mobility and some other things. Like, do you think that, I know there's no guarantees because everyone can react to different training methods, and if it matches up well with what they need, then they can see an explosion in their swing speed. So let's talk about like fitness training, because that's something we've spoken about, which is either, you know, mobility work, strength training, and then I don't know if explosive, like the med ball throwing and the jumping and that type of stuff would fall into that as well. So the gym work has become quite popular, certainly on the PGA Tour. We've had Mike Carroll on the show a number of times with his app. Let's talk about that and how it can contribute to swing speed.
Sure. Yeah. Big topic. And that's probably been one of the areas where a lot of my research was, is kind of identifying correlations between different physical attributes and swing speed. If you look at kind of fitness in golf, it's kind of evolved a lot, and there's probably a lot of different opinions on it. So a lot of what I've been trying to do is kind of start from basic principles of what would need to happen in the body for me to swing faster, and how does the physical side actually contribute to that, or could it contribute to that? So you'll hear a lot of theories about, there's a lot of focus on flexibility early on in kind of the golf fitness space, that if I can rotate more, then I should be able to swing faster. And then there's definitely the lift heavy weights, throw medicine balls. That's kind of been the maybe more modern approach, where we need to develop the force capabilities of the body while maybe addressing some of the mobility. And I think the actual kind of story is a bit more nuanced. It's understanding what each of these methods are going to do to the body and how that could contribute to what you're trying to do in the swing. And so when we think about, like with strength training, there's a few changes that that can kind of promote in the body. And the main idea is, when you lift a heavy weight, a few things are happening during that training session. One of the most important is, from the nervous system, it has to send out signals down to the muscles. And its goal with that is to get the right amount of muscle involved based off of what your movement goal is. And in this case, if it's lifting a heavy weight, we're trying to get as much muscle involved as we possibly can. And they're organized into what we call motor units, which are just groups of muscle fibers that are controlled by a single kind of motor neuron, a nerve cell that is the one that's like actually transmitting these signals onto the muscle to get them to contract. And that's how our body controls how much force is being generated, which muscles are moving and how, is by recruiting different numbers and combinations of muscle fibers from different parts of the body. And strength training is a really good way, when you have to lift a very heavy weight and apply a lot of force to it, to convince the body to send this very strong signal down to the muscles and get as many of the muscle fibers contracting as possible. So when we actually kind of look at over the course of 4, 6, 8 weeks, in my opinion, one of the biggest effects that strength training has is, if people have not trained a whole lot or done much that's really intense, a lot of people, when they test out how much of their muscle they can actually activate during different tasks, they often are leaving a lot of the biggest, fastest muscle fibers kind of in reserve. It takes a large signal from the brain to recruit those, and it takes practice to get better at actually recruiting them when you need them. And what we see after 4, 6, 8 weeks of strength training is that when you test those people again, when they're doing other tasks, they're a bit better at recruiting more of the fast twitch fibers, which are the hardest ones to recruit. It requires the biggest signal. And so that's, I think, one of the biggest benefits of strength training is actually neural. Even though we usually associate lifting weights with gaining muscle, we can get to that in a minute. I think that's more of a long-term benefit, and maybe not the primary reason I'd have a golfer lift weights, to be completely honest. But in that kind of short time frame, someone that hasn't trained much before, they can start to access more of the fastest muscle fibers in the muscles that are trained. So we kind of call that motor unit recruitment. And then, of course, the tension that's being developed from these muscles contracting provides a stimulus for the muscles to adapt over time, because I refer to exercise or fitness training as a form of controlled stress on the body. And that stress is going to trigger our body to hopefully adapt so it's more prepared for that stress the next time. So by putting this big stress on the muscles, one of the ways it'll adapt in response to this tension being developed is gaining muscle size. And hopefully that size is coming in the form of adding more proteins that actually cause contraction to happen. And so theoretically, that should allow us to generate more force from that same muscle over time. So strength training does have a benefit, but it also, there's some specificity. There's big differences between what we're doing when we're lifting a heavy squat versus swinging a golf club at 120 miles per hour. So it's not a perfect transfer either. There needs to be some component that's the moving fast, moving in patterns that are more specific to the golf swing. And so then we'll usually pair that with something like throws, jumps. This is a bit more specific in terms of we're trying to move the body very quickly. There's different things happening from a nervous system perspective where we're firing more rapidly than we do when we're lifting a weight that's really heavy and slow to move. And that can kind of continue to contribute to that ability to generate force quickly. But I believe the speed training craze with actually trying to swing faster and this specific training is a big piece of these raw kind of ability to generate force and move is great, but we need to be able to apply it to the specific demands of the golf swing, which is a very complex and technical movement.
I'm the poster boy for this, definitely. When I was 15, I had a little swing speed monitor. My swing speed was 99 mile an hour. I could bump it up to 100 occasionally. And I decided to hit the weights. After a while of doing that, I didn't see much success. So I learned about nutrition as well. And I learned about eating protein, eating calories. And over the course of probably 20 years, I gained 60 pounds. So I went from 110 to 170. How much do you think my swing speed changed? As a guess, 60 pounds added. What do you think my swing speed changed?
We are going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Maui Nui Venison, a mission-based food company bringing the healthiest red meat on the planet directly to your door. My wife and I have been absolutely obsessed with their products the last few months, cooking with their meat and eating their jerky. Also, Maui Nui has a very special operation going on, and it is the only stress-free, 100% wild-harvested red meat on the market. And most importantly, it's seriously delicious and easy to cook. My wife and I have cooked many of their recipes, including meatballs, different loins, and it is delicious. Perhaps my favorite products are their all-natural venison jerky sticks. You get 10 grams of protein and just 55 calories. This is a great snack after a workout, or you can bring it on the course if you're feeling a little hungry, and you'll get a huge kick of protein with very little calories. Perhaps one of the most important things for me is that there's only 1.5% fat in all of their meat. I know I'm getting maximum protein, nutrient-dense calories, and more importantly, it's very low in saturated fat. And that's something that's really important to me in my diet. Because there's such a limited supply of their meat, they open up a few monthly restocks available for purchase. So now for our offer. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com/golf and take advantage of this limited time offer for 20% off your first order. Once again, that's MauiNuiVenison.com/golf. MauiNuiVenison.com/golf. Or use the coupon code GOLF to get 20% off your first order. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/sweetspot. LinkedIn is not just a job board. It helps you hire professionals you cannot find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to a new perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. Also on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Just recently, they even launched a new feature that helps you write your job description, making the process even easier and quicker. And they know that small business owners like myself and Adam are wearing so many hats and might not have the resources to hire, so it's a great place to get help. Now here's what you can do. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/sweetspot. That's linkedin.com/sweetspot to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Zero.
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe 1 or 2 mile an hour. But, you know, I was very focused on lifting to avoid injury as well. So I would do things very slow, controlled. I'd use a lot of effort. I would go till failure, but I'd do things very slow and controlled. And so I actually learned in my dissertation that it's more to do with the intent that you have than it is even the speed. So say you stick something really heavy on the bar, you're going to move it slow either way. But if the intent to move it fast is there, you could probably change how the nervous system is firing, right? And I didn't have that intent. And I think that's what speed training has unlocked for me.
Yeah, so that kind of goes to another point of, I think what I want to try to push for moving forward is, it's not just what you do, it's how you do it, and it's where it fits into the bigger picture. So I think we've kind of sometimes moved to this philosophy of just lift heavy and move fast from time to time, but it needs to be part of an overall system that hopefully is going to help you get what you want to do, which is to swing faster. And so what we'll see in a lot of cases, some people will get a few mile per hour bump when they start strength training, probably because of some of those neural benefits. A big thing is when you first start training, you respond to a lot of stuff very readily. But the further you get along, the harder it is to kind of move that needle. And I think a lot of it is strength training alone. In those initial kind of 6-8 weeks, you're going to get some of those benefits if the intent is there. And that's a key piece. We can talk about that across all training methods, that you might get some of those neural benefits of being able to recruit more of those fast twitch fibers. And that may give you an opportunity that maybe you can use a little bit more of that in the swing. So some people do get a few mile per hour bump, but I tend to see a lot, and it's going to plateau if all you're doing is lifting heavy. And the strength and conditioning world may not love me saying this, but I think if all you did was lift heavy, some of those benefits are going to plateau fairly quickly. You're still going to have some positive stuff, like muscle mass can definitely help. It's more raw, contractile material you can use to generate force. But when you're constantly lifting heavy at slow speeds, there's also some changes that aren't optimal for swinging fast in a very complex movement pattern as well. So I absolutely recommend everyone should strength train. I think, one, it gives you some of those neural benefits. When you have to lift a weight really heavy, it's as good a way as any of convincing your body to send those really strong signals. From a health standpoint, it's absolute huge in terms of maintaining muscle mass as you get older. There's just massive widespread health benefits of resistance training. The connective tissues adapt to resistance training as well. I just think if it becomes the most important thing in trying to gain speed, it needs to be a secondary and complementary piece, not I'm just going to put more weight on a squat bar and that's going to make me faster. So I've definitely viewed it as, if I can get my strength work done as quickly and efficiently as possible and get the benefits and then focus more of my time and energy on the stuff that's going to move the needle for me, that's been more my approach recently.
That's fair. I think I've seen that in my experience. And I feel like this kind of happens with every method. Like if you just did the speed sticks, you're going to plateau if you didn't have enough strength. And if you just, as you said, if you just did strength and nothing like explosive, then you're going to plateau there. So it sounds like the people who are most ambitious and are willing to do the well-rounded stuff are going to get the most gains. So to use your words, like where would you go elsewhere? Like if you feel like you've checked off strength training, and I'm totally with you on the health benefits, like the research is insanely good. I want to keep lifting weights 2 to 3 times a week for the rest of my life, but I realize you can't do it 7 days a week. So what moves the needle more with swing speed when you hit that plateau, if you were doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you do want to, in addition to the strength work, even with high intent, you do want some of the kind of, I'm going to try to move really fast. And that's throws, jumps, that type of thing. There's a reason that, you know, Mike Carroll uses a lot of that. Everyone has that. That is kind of from a gym perspective also going to help with the, especially if it's mixed in with the strength work, you're going to get some of the rapid nervous system firing from that type of work. And there's even like at the muscle level, we always associate training with gaining muscle mass, but there's a lot of stuff that happens at the muscle level in terms of the architecture of how it's actually oriented that dictates whether you're good at moving fast or generating a lot of force slowly as well. So even things like moving fast from time to time, throws, jumps, sprinting, that type of thing is good for kind of making sure that we're preserving the fastest twitch muscle fibers, the ones that are really fast to contract. And that's both important for aging because those tend to drop off when people stop training for power or speed as they get older. But even for if you're going to maximize power or speed in any sort of athletic movement like the golf swing, you want as many of those really fast twitch fibers as you can. So those are kind of the pieces from the gym side. And then the mobility side is a whole another animal, but a lot of it is going to be if you have obvious mobility issues that could be affecting your ability to move the way you want to move in the golf swing, turn a little bit more, then I think sometimes it's just, I'm just going to stretch and it's automatically going to go to my golf swing, but you still have to learn how to use that new movement pattern within the swing. Otherwise, you can have access to that range of motion. It doesn't mean you're going to use it. From there, that's where the speed training world has kind of taken off and why people are seeing benefits, because you could have this big physical engine for generating force and generating it quickly, but you have to learn how to coordinate that within the golf swing where you're moving a lot of joints through very specific ranges of motion and very specific sequencing of the kinetics. So you could do all of the gym work you want, but it's not going to make you swing efficiently. But when you have that base to begin with, you can use those fast twitch muscle fibers, you can generate force quickly, and then you learn to use that within the movement pattern of the swing. That's where you're going to see kind of the biggest carryover.
So let's get into the speed training, the sticks. And before we say that, if you told someone, like if someone came to you and said, I want to get faster, I'm going to go buy the Stack or Super Speed or whatever other ones are out there, or lift weights, which one would you tell them to do first in a perfect world? Maybe that's not the same answer for everyone, but you tell them to get stronger first?
If I had to choose one or the other, it's really hard. It depends. Okay. Are they interested in gaining speed quickly? If that's the case, speed training is probably going to be the quickest route for most people. And we can talk about when I think it works really well and some people that plateau fairly quickly. And it's not settled science by any means. We're starting to get into a world where I have my kind of theories and why I think it may work the way it does. But we obviously have a lot to learn on that end. If their goal is short-term gains in speed, yeah, it's going to be, it doesn't even need to be a specific system, but you're going to want to spend some time swinging, even if it's your own driver fast. And a lot of it is a lot of golfers have never done any sort of max intense swinging. And I think there's a massively large effect in the short term of when you take someone that's always been kind of focused on ball flight and impact, and you take away ball flight and impact, and their main source of feedback is swing speed, and you tell them, make that number go up. I think there's a lot that can happen in the short term, especially for golfers that have never really tried to swing fast before. But if for long-term health benefits, like obviously the strength side, and it sounds cliche, but I think doing both at once is actually really important. A little bit of everything, because I think as your body changes in response to training, you're going to want to also make sure you're learning to then adapt that new movement pattern into the golf swing. Because what you do in the gym absolutely can have small influences on what you're doing in the swing. And I'll kind of diverge just quickly. There was a research study where they were looking at the vertical jump as kind of a model for this. And they collected a bunch of data and then they ran simulations on what would happen if we adjusted the amount of force that different muscles or torque generators could actually produce during the jumping pattern. And just increasing the forces actually threw off the sequencing of the jump. So what they found is that performance dropped in the short term, but then when they kind of optimized it for, they then learned to sequence with their new capabilities, jump height went way up in the simulation. And that kind of aligns with this. The optimal situation is you're improving the way the body moves, but you're pairing that with opportunities to learn how to use that in the swing. And I see speed training as kind of a skill learning opportunity of how to apply what you have in your body to swinging faster, which requires some sort of change from what you're doing currently.
We've had a lot of people from the various companies on the show at one point, and I've been honest with, you know, I first used Super Speed when it literally first came out. I was very skeptical, but there was a noticeable jump for me. I've used the Stack. I also think it's really well done. But yeah, people hit, talk about like expectations, because plateauing is very common. It happened to me and it's frustrating where you see like, oh, I went from 100 to 105 and I'm sticking with the protocols. And like 3 months later, I'm still at 105. And then you see these stories, like I've seen people who explode, like obviously the upper end of it, they go from like 100. I get these emails. So I'm like, I'm at 118. Should I get a new driver shaft? And I'm like, oh, screw you. So What's a reasonable expectation with working with the different, you know, stick systems, we'll call them?
It kind of goes back to, like, I've been trying to think through, if you think through what has to happen for us to swing fast, there's a whole lot involved with sending these signals down from the brain. So you have this movement goal, which is to swing a golf club fast. And then that's going to change again if your goal is then to swing fast and strike a golf ball. And then that's going to change slightly again if the goal is to strike the golf ball fast, but also keep it in play. There's going to be slight differences in terms of the signals we're being sent through the body down to activate all of these different muscles at the right time and also inhibit the muscles we don't want involved at certain times as well. It's a very complex kind of motor control system. And I think a massive effect, the ones that just take off right from the get-go, is kind of, as I mentioned, especially like myself, I had a pretty quick increase in speed and I was filming everything. This was kind of recently when I had not been swinging a golf club a whole lot and then started intentionally speed training. I was kind of recording my swing and just seeing what happened over time when I looked back after 6 weeks of training with it. I had this big uptick in speed within just a few weeks. And when I looked at it, my sequencing had kind of shifted to a bit more athletic pattern right off the bat. I was loading a bit better in the backswing. I was a bit more earlier with my transition to my lead foot. And that's something I've kind of seen with golfers as well, especially the ones that tend to come in very like technically constrained, the ones that have always been very concerned about accuracy and maybe have kind of inefficient movement patterns in the first place, that there's a powerful kind of stimulus when you take away the ball, you give them a stick, and the only thing they have is feedback in terms of speed. I think there's some self-organization that happens for some of them that they naturally kind of gravitate towards more athletic movement patterns. It frees them up to move a bit different, and it's kind of this skill learning opportunity. And so in my opinion, a lot of these people that just take off in the first kind of 4 or 6 weeks, I would imagine if we looked at their swings, there probably would be some change. And it may be that they're starting to load the body a little differently. They're starting to transfer pressure a bit differently. And then when we look at weighted implement training, over and under weighted implements has been used since for decades in track and field. And a lot of the best throwing coaches of all time, they used it intentionally as a skill learning drill of we're going to use heavy implements sometimes to promote bigger separation between the trunk and the hips. We're going to use the faster ones to kind of focus on these really dynamic transitions and loading the front foot faster. And this has been around a while. It's just that it's somewhat new in golf in terms of becoming popular in the last 5-10 years. And I think there's probably some, we talk about nervous system adaptations, some of the stuff we talked about with sequencing at the right times, firing faster. It's a new kind of coordination challenge when you're trying to swing faster than normal. But some of it is going to be just that kind of change in your movement goal, and the feedback you're giving is probably going to, for some golfers, shift them towards exploring new ways of moving that they might not have done when they were worried about hitting it straight or making good contact.
The over and underweight stuff is, I suppose you'd class it as differential training in a way, or variability training. So, I mean, we talk about that in terms of, you know, improving face strike, things like that. So either trying to hit the center of the face using different patterns, set up at the toe, try and hit the center, set up at the heel, try and hit the center, or even trying to hit the wrong parts, you know, doing what you wouldn't normally do, trying to hit the toe intentionally or heel intentionally. And this is just more of a physical way of differential training with the over and under speed training. Yeah, I like how it, you know, you're talking about self-organization as well, how when you change speed, the club is going to be delivered differently, right? I mean, if you even if you apply more force from the top of the swing, down at the bottom, close to impact, that club is going to do different things. You know, it's going to be swinging more out, farther away from you, unless you also add more force to pull it back in again. So, you know, you got to give yourself time to self-organize these changes. You know, the first few times you swing the club really super fast, you may even lose balance forwards because that club is effectively weighing heavier through impact. Yeah, I suppose that's where, I mean, my point was a little self-serving. This is where skill training helps. You know, the ability, I think one of the reasons why my training has quickly integrated into my real swing with a golf ball is because the first few times when I'm like, oh God, I'm hitting a little high and heel on the face here, I can change that quickly. I know, I understand from a conscious level how to change that quickly. So I think that skill training or the skills that I have in terms of impact skills actually help the speed training transfer as well. So that was my self-serving point.
I have another question for you. I've had some people tell me privately who are people who understand swing speed, they don't like the sticks. And they tell me, well, if you're not hitting something, it's not going to work. And I get it and don't get it at the same time, just because anecdotally, like, yeah, I've seen the speed increases by swinging the sticks and just having the intent. And the self-organization thing is real, I think. You know, looking at that radar and trying to make the number go up, and you're like, I'm going to maybe pick up my lead foot a little bit. I'm going to make my shoulder turn a bit more. I'm going to whoosh a bit more at the bottom of the swing. I think you figure some things out. So what do you say to, you know, people who say, like, I think you need to hit something because that's what you're doing in golf? Any validity to that?
Yes and no. I think that doesn't negate the benefits it has. I think it's just one piece of the puzzle. So when I'm thinking about trying to increase either my own speed or a golfer I'm working with, we're not just stopping at speed sticks. It's a piece of the puzzle. I almost have kind of created this kind of continuum. I need a better name for it, but I kind of right now something about like speed potential to strokes gained off the tee continuum of like, all right, there's a powerful, like, so when I think about speed training sessions, where I've kind of settled on is there's a few things I try to manipulate. I'm not a swing coach. So if I get some natural just movement pattern improvements from having someone do speed training, great. But hopefully they're also working with a coach to kind of fine tune that. And I think that's an important point. We always assume that it's always going to be beneficial to, it's going to be beneficial self-organization, but in some cases, maybe if you just go crazy with speed training and you're just doing swing after swing, maybe you do lose some dispersion and you need to dial it in. One of my points with speed training as a whole is like, we need to be systematic about how we use it, like any other tool. The same thing with strength training. You wouldn't just say squat until your legs give out. We want to make sure that when you're performing an exercise in the gym, it's having the desired result. And I think that's important across all aspects of skill learning, is that hopefully it's translating to something beneficial in the long term. But basically, I think there is value when I'm thinking about designing speed training sessions. I can kind of manipulate the feedback. So whether they're being given just club head speed, in the case of we're trying to get new peaks, kind of increase that speed potential, there's a different kind of form of feedback when you add ball speed or strike location on the face, because now they have to balance the speed of the club being delivered, but also the strike to kind of translate that to ball speed. There's then a whole other dimension of if you introduce the launch characteristics of like, okay, our ball speed's good, but we need it to now have a good launch angle and spin rate, and we want it to actually fly a long ways. And then a whole another dimension on top of that when it's, okay, I'm on a course and I need to manage dispersion as well. And so I view the speed sticks are really good at the front end of that, and it could be dry swings, like swings off the ball with your driver as well. When all you're focused on is getting that speed number to go up, you're probably going to move in different ways, and you're going to probably have a higher potential of just all your intent being focused on swing speed when you don't need to worry about contacting the ball. But if that's all you do, then there's going to be probably inefficient transfer to the rest of that kind of continuum. You're also going to want to spend some time striking the ball. And one thing I've kind of worked into is the next step. I like hitting foam balls because I'm not as worried about strike quality. But then once I'm kind of got the speed where I want it there, or maybe as a separate session the same week, I'm going to spend some time hitting a real ball and measuring strike location and ball speed. And that's kind of my ability, like how much of my speed can I translate into quality strike and get it to actually turn into ball speed. And then eventually I may do some range work of, okay, I want to get similar ball speeds, but actually have it fly good distances with decent dispersion. So I see all of these as different pieces of the puzzle. And sometimes isolating one specific part of it and kind of gearing your environment and feedback towards that can be really useful. But you also have to incorporate the other pieces if you want it to transfer to what you probably ultimately care about, which is playing better golf or hitting it further on the course.
We are going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
We have an exclusive offer on one of my favorite golf shoe brands, True Linkswear. They just released their new Lux G shoes, which is their first big release of 2024, and it is packed with a ton of features. The Lux G is available in both men's and women's models, and it combines tour-level performance with a new fit and feel. You'll get the comfort that True Linkswear is known for with their Wonderlux midsole for a supportive yet comfortable ride. The Lux G is also fully waterproof with a 2-year warranty, and they have designed it with their padded heel lock system to ensure stability throughout the entire golf swing. But they didn't stop there. True Linkswear always pays attention to the small details. There's padding on the back to prevent rubbing against your foot, an antimicrobial comfort insole, and the Lux Gs come in multiple colors. Sweet Spot listeners can get 15% off Deluxe G shoes by visiting truelinkswear.com and using promo code SWEETSPOT. Once again, that's truelinkswear.com and use promo code SWEETSPOT, that's one word, to get 15% off their new Lux G shoes.
If that makes sense.
I think it makes total sense, because I think that's one of the downsides of it, is if you do overdose on one aspect of it and you're not making sure you're like keeping your eye on the ball of like the functional part of it, which is striking the center of the face and keeping it in play, like the stuff we talk about on the show a lot. And that's why when I've done this, the speed training stuff, I'll always end the session with like trying to hit my driver, just like bringing it back to that, because the last thing you want to do is do that type of work and then it negatively impacts your golf swing, which that's, of course, definitely a risk. We've spoken to other people about this. I think there's no guarantees that doing the sticks, some people get better sequencing and they get this like nice extra benefit to it. And other people don't like it. And they're like, I'm on the golf course and my swing feels different. Like that's a possibility too. That's why people kind of have to mess around with this stuff. Maybe you try the weight. I think the weight training would probably be a lower risk in that sense, and the fitness stuff. Yeah, some people like don't like the sticks and they're terrified of them, and I get that.
Yeah, and it could even be a volume thing as well. Well, I mean, just I know like all of these systems have kind of protocols, or you may look on Instagram and see a long driver's hitting 100 balls at max intent during a session. But for some people, like I'm very much the same way. What I found works best for myself is I start sessions with kind of quality strikes on the ball. I'm trying to kind of manage strike quality as well. I'll then kind of progress and ramp up to some max intent stuff on days where I'm trying to work intensely. And then I like to finish up with, can I then translate that back to hitting the ball? And that's just kind of an example of one session I may do, but I'm always trying to balance these different pieces. It's knowing how each method you use kind of fits into what you're trying to do. It's being systematic about how you use any tool, not just speed sticks.
Yeah. Do you think everyone has a limit? Like my limit, I've seen to like 108 to 110 is like the best I seem to be able to do to play on course. Like I've not been able to crack that with the sticks, weight training, like everything. But then you see guys like, you know, I'll make the excuse, oh, I'm 5'8 and I have short arms and short legs. But like, look at Xander Schauffele and Rory. Like these guys are still increased. Like Xander Schauffele, it's unbelievable. Like that guy's over 180 mile per hour ball speed now. It's incredible. And you look at him and you're like, how? So do you think everyone has like limitless potential, or some people it's, you know, maybe you didn't do this hard enough as a kid. This is your ceiling. Whatever you do from here on is going to be minimal gains. You might have to go elsewhere in golf to see some benefit.
Everyone, I think, has some sort of ceiling. I think most people haven't scratched it. But the problem is there's probably going to be a period where something needs to change in order to make another jump. That could be physical. So, I mean, there may reach a point where there is massive differences. And just to take an example, if we did muscle biopsies of a whole bunch of golfers in kind of key muscles, some of them are going to be more fast twitch versus slow twitch. And that is responsive to training. It's about 50% genetic component, give or take, but it does respond to training to some degree. So you could do some gym training focused on high velocity work and try to shift that as just a very basic example. A big one, though, is probably at some point you're probably going to have to make some technical changes and decide, am I willing to take the risk of long drivers? They exaggerate a lot of the movements that your even very fast PGA Tour players do. So they're going to do much larger shifts of the center of mass off the ball. They're going to have much larger magnitudes of forces, and everything is just more exaggerated and faster and more aggressive. And so there very well could be a point where you're going to have to make a technical change to make another leap, and you have to decide if that's worth it. If your goal is to play really good golf, those elite golfers, a lot of them have a lot more in the tank. They just have to decide, what speed am I comfortable playing at? There's a balance of that for sure, because playing good golf is different than just maximizing ball speed. So Tony Finau being a perfect example, he could...
Yeah. I think every golfer needs to consider that, because at some point, and this goes for like putting practice, wedge practice, at some point, like, you make big gains and you kind of like lock them in and you're like, wow, this really benefited my game. But at the same time, if you kept putting in the same amount of effort, you're going to see marginal returns where it's like, okay, now your iron game could use that. Let's go put in the work there. Like, I often say that to people about the short game. It's like, if you're sloppy with your putter and your wedges, like, absolutely tackle that. But you're going to hit a ceiling. And then if you keep working there, like, you just don't see the same jump. And I think the same is true for this stuff. Like, if people, you know, you don't have to go nuts. I know everyone has like limited time, like some of the weight training, some of the speed sticks, one or the other. And you see that big jump and you kind of hopefully maintain it. That's huge. And then it's like, it can be frustrating. You're like, well, now I want to go to 117. And you're like at 115. You have to decide if that's worth your time or not.
There could be a point even where it's just, I mean, one of the kind of fundamental principles of exercise science is progressive overload. Your body's not going to change its physiology unless you give it a reason to, for the most part. So it may just be that at some point you're going to have to change what you're doing. And so one thing is, like, a lot of the long drivers, the sheer volume of high speed work they're doing throughout a week when they're kind of trying to peak for competition, a lot of golfers, one, may not be able to tolerate it, and two, they'd have to build up to that. And two, it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. So there's, I think, a lot of people have a lot of room to gain, whether it's through a technical standpoint, or maybe their technique's very good, but they just, the physicality is not there. Or it's a lot of people, I've talked to a few people that it's matching up what someone can do physically versus technically. Like, a lot of people try to swing in a specific way that just doesn't make sense for what their body can actually do. And so those people will see a massive leap if they just find some matchups in the swing that makes sense for their body versus trying to copy what a Rory McIlroy does. Or, because the reality is, I can't swing like him and a lot of other people can't. That, I think that is, there's room for growth in a lot of different ways. It's just, what is your limiting factor and how much work and energy is it going to take to kind of check that box and take the next leap?
Probably one of the lowest hanging fruits that we haven't really touched on much is just the psychology of it. And lots of players like you and myself, Alex, we grew up with the idea that straight is better. Hit as many fairways as you can, just poke it down there. And that's kind of what we did. Swing it easy. And that's exactly what I got. Constrain everything, towels under the arm, shorten your swing to make it more controlled. And all of a sudden you can't hit it out your shadow. And I've seen so many times where you just ask someone, can you hit it harder? Can it, like, what's your max intent? And all of a sudden you see a 3, 4, 5 mile an hour increase in speed. And then you tag those shots on a TrackMan or GC Quad and you see, well, actually, you're just as accurate when you hit it harder. So maybe that's a starting point as well. So we got all these different levers that we can pull, really.
Yeah, that side is very interesting. Of like, there's a research study. So that kind of goes back to when I was talking about the motor unit recruitment, that a lot of us don't, unless you're training intensely or doing something with maximal intent, you may not even be ever recruiting your fastest, most powerful muscle, the muscle fibers in these kind of movement muscles. And there's been a line of research that has consistently shown that you can increase strength in certain simple movements through just motor imagery training. So they imagine themselves contracting these muscles as hard as they possibly can. And that naturally is triggering that same response from the brain saying, I need to send massive signals down to the muscles. And then when they actually physically do the test, they can actually generate more force within that task. And so it just kind of shows the nervous system plays a huge part, and our intent and our movement goals are such a strong stimulus for how we end up moving. And that's part of it, why I think that kind of, you take away the ball, you take away ball flight, and you just set a speed radar and a speed stick. And I think that's why a lot of people can unlock some speed fairly quickly with it in the short term.
I think the common thread with like everything you said, whether it's weight training, the speed training, all of it, and my experience and talking to plenty of other golfers, you have to get after it consciously. Like, you gotta, like, even if you're just hitting balls and you're taking 10 balls with your driver, like, you need to access something and just go after it as hard as you can. Hopefully don't get hurt. I know sometimes that happens. It's happened to me. I've hurt myself lifting weights and doing that, unfortunately. I think the intent, we always talk about this practice, like, the intent seems to be the common thread between all this stuff. Like, you need to, like, reach deeper and push yourself harder, and then your body kind of adapts to that. That's been my experience. And again, if you're brought up, I also think it translates to the course with your driver. And I've experienced this. Like, you're always fighting this balance, especially like in tournaments, of how fast can I swing to keep it in control? Like, you mentioned Tony Finau, like, he can hit 200 ball speed if he wants, but he plays in the high 170s on the tour because he knows that's his limit to keep it in play. And it's always this balance of, like, how hard can I get after it without the same time of, like, sacrificing my strike quality and face control and all that stuff. But I think a lot of golfers are holding back, especially with their driver. They just have this mentality that, like, I have to guide the ball. And I think that's holding them back from accuracy as well. So I do see a lot of benefit to, like, getting after it with, for a lot of people with the sticks or whatever, because I think it can, like, free you up with your driver a bit as well. Of course, it's on a case-by-case basis, but I've noticed that in my game, and I've spoken to other people too. It's like, you have to be willing to step on the tee and just kind of let it go sometimes.
That's why I kind of almost view the speed sticks as, we like to kind of talk about nervous system adaptations, which I don't love that term because all of human movement is dictated by the nervous system. So to improve at any human movement, the nervous system is going to be involved in some way. I want to know what specifically is happening. And I think the motor learning piece is a large part of why people see such success. It's the combination of changing kind of your movement intent and goals combined with a change in the feedback, which I think a lot of people just get very focused on strike quality and ball flight. And when you remove that and tell them to make the number go up on the speed radar, different things are going to happen. The challenge is then, how can we make sure that what happens is going to be most effective for them on the course, and actually transferring that to striking the ball, which I think is why it's not just off the ball speed stick work. It's also part of a more complete kind of system towards trying to swing faster on the course and finding that right balance, as well as you mentioned, of what is the speed that I can play most comfortably at and actually help my score with.
Yeah, the analogy I'd use for that is, if you're hammering a nail and you're not very confident with it, you're going to take a small tap, right? And this is what most golfers are, because they're concerned with quality, especially when there's pressure there, right? When, if it's a competition, that's the pressure of having your hand in the way. The moment you take your fingers away and you ask them to hammer the nail, it might do something slightly different. Maybe it's a little longer, a little free-flowing, because there's less constraint there mentally. If you take the nail away and you just say, hammer the table as hard as you can, they're going to do something completely different. And that's like taking the golf ball away. And that can open up new movement patterns, new exploration. That's another point that I wanted to make, is that with the differential training, because I'm using the stack system. And so when you're doing it, sometimes you've got a super light stick, sometimes it's super heavy. And what I'm finding by doing that is, it's kind of conscious, but kind of unconscious as well, is my body is exploring when I'm doing that in more ways than I would if I just had a golf club there. So for example, when I have a super light stick there, I found that holding it very lightly and feeling a smoother transition and then more whip at the bottom gets the highest results with that stick. Whereas when I have a heavier stick, I've got to feel like I hold it a little bit tighter, and I've got to feel like everything's a bit more tensed at the top of my swing. I've even got to feel like I swing it back a little faster and the transition is more aggressive. So it's almost like your body's testing these different ways of achieving this speed with different implements. And that is, on some level, having an effect when I go back to the real club there.
Yeah, that kind of circling back around, Paul Glaser wrote a really good paper. He does a lot in kind of the skill acquisition biomechanics space. And he wrote a paper on the use of biomechanical feedback, and kind of based off of some of the recent skill acquisition and motor control research, what role could biomechanical feedback play? And he used the example of launch monitor data of kind of channeling the search towards your optimal movement pattern. And I've started to play around with it. The max intent stuff is one piece. And we often talk about, I think that piece is really important for driving faster speeds. We always talk about, like, in the speed training world, we're going to kind of drag up our average speed by increasing our peak speed. I've been playing around with the other end of swinging slightly faster than normal, but using it as an opportunity to explore different movement patterns. And I kind of play game with myself of how easy can I make it feel while still getting a number that's faster than I usually swing. And I kind of use it as an excuse to play around with different movement patterns and using speed as my feedback. So I kind of had posted recently about, like, a pyramid drill where I'm just going to, each swing, I'm going to try to make my speed go up a little bit more, and then I hit a peak, and then I'm going to work back down. And I'm kind of constantly like, how can I make it go up a little bit with just a small increase in effort? And then I've been doing one that I actually kind of took from the track and field world with throwers, but they call it range throwing. And they test your peak speed that day, or in their case, distance thrown with a javelin or a shot put. And then the coach will take some percentage of that and set kind of a boundary or a hula hoop or something and tell them, your goal is to throw it into that hula hoop while making it feel as easy as you possibly can. Figure out how to do that. And so it might be at 85% of their max distance. And then once they get pretty good at doing that, then they'll bump it to 90% and then 95%. And then soon they're, you know, achieving 95, 96, 97% of their peak distance while making it feel really, really easy. And then they test their peak distance again and are throwing it even further. So I think that movement exploration, and it's a way to learn how to experiment with what works well for you and kind of channeling that search. And that can also raise your ceiling from the bottom of, I think, Dan John, who's a track and field coach. He referred to it as nudging up the peak speed from the bottom, of using these kind of exploratory sessions to figure out kind of ways you can swing differently or move differently. And that kind of opens up new potential for when you add the intent on top of that, then you might actually surprise yourself and see that your speed's moved up even more. I think there's a limit on, we don't want to just hammer away at max intent constantly, because it can throw off movement patterns for some people. If you're not careful, you're probably not going to swing with that sort of intent on the course. But if you're kind of combining that with some of these other, maybe like submaximal stuff to explore different movement patterns, where it's fast enough to be similar to what you're trying to do on the course, but not so fast that you're kind of out of control. And then you also are kind of combining that with calibration sessions of trying to also strike it quality and like, this is what I would actually do in competition. These different sessions can all kind of offer different pieces to that kind of motor learning process, if you would.
Interesting. So what's your, I have to ask, what's your cruising speed right now? What have you gotten to?
Yeah, so I started basically, a little backdrop, when I was in college, I was probably, we didn't really use launch monitors. It wasn't that long ago, but it must have been still before the kind of launch monitor craze. The only time I remember getting tested was like when I was getting fitted for clubs. And I was probably in like the 107, 108. And that was when I kind of went all at trying to increase speed after I graduated. And I got it up to maybe 115, 116. I have played very little in the last 4 or 5 years. So I've just focused more on helping golfers and researching more than actually playing myself. And in December, I decided I'm going to just use myself as a test subject again and try out some stuff. And I started at cruising, was probably about 111, 112. My swing was just kind of a mess after not swinging for a while. And then by now, I think my cruising is about 121. And when I step on it, I'm about 125, 126 now. So it's been a pretty big, I have been training consistently, so like physically I'm in a good spot. And then I've been kind of applying some of this different speed training techniques and playing around with different movement patterns. And I've seen a big jump, but I obviously had a big jump initially, 5-6 miles an hour, just from like, I started swinging a club again and kind of got back to, I probably got back to my baseline, which was like 115 when I kind of stopped playing.
So while it was probably a combination of things, is there any one thing that stands out for you that made a big jump?
I definitely have probably opened up better movement patterns for speed. Just kind of, I'm always like some of these sessions where I'm playing around with, what can I do? Can I try different things to try to get my speed up? And then I can learn to do it at kind of sub-maximal speeds. And then what happens when I step on it doing that? So I always small frame, but I also really did not create much width in the backswing. My hands would be very low. I didn't shift very well off the ball. It was all very like, I had a lot of stingers with my driver when I was competing. It kind of stayed on my front foot and just kind of flipped at it and hit a low fade a lot of the times. So just loading better. And then I realized that I would, when I started swinging fast, like started doing speed training, I would do like a big shift off the ball and then I would never get back to my lead foot. So I would kind of shift and then I'd sway and then I'd be really late to get back to it. So just getting back to my lead foot, and I've always been very good at like vertical forces. It's just that I needed to time it better. When I've been on force plates, I'm well over 2 times my body weight with vertical force. It's just usually late. So a lot of it was just timing and sequencing and stuff.
So you talked a lot about being systematic. So obviously everyone doesn't have the opportunity to work directly with a swing speed expert. A lot of us are just kind of, you could subscribe to certain apps, do the speed sticks, weight training. But in a perfect world, if you wanted to be systematic with someone and kind of guide them through these short-term versus long-term gains, make sure they're not going to hurt themselves, it's transferring appropriately to the golf course. Like, what would that, like, if you were working with someone directly, like, would those programs look very different based on the golfer, or would they be similar?
I kind of talk about in cross, like, my interest now is kind of like, how can we fit the physical and the speed training stuff together in the most logical way, depending on their goals. And time frames matter a lot. If I'm working with a junior golfer that like their goal is to have a long, sustainable career, we're working off of time frames that are very different than someone like, hey, I want to increase some speed by the end of the year. When I talk about being systematic, a lot of it is avoiding some of the pitfalls people jump into when they start training for speed, both in the gym and with speed training. And a lot of it is they get eager and they jump in and they go really high volume really quick. And that's fine, but I think it's generally a good idea to start small and build up from there. You don't need to do everything at once. It's start somewhere and be consistent with it and build those habits. And in the gym, and I think it's the same for speed training, getting people to start slow and building up has a lot of benefits. One, when you're first starting, it doesn't take much to move the needle. So you don't want to just jump right into hammering away at high volume, maximal intensity all the time when you don't need to. Two, it allows you to kind of ease into it. Your body will adapt to stuff if you give it the opportunity and you don't overdo it and progressively kind of increase from there. And three, I think building those big habits with easy wins early on. I'm going to start by doing this twice a week for 30 minutes. And let's get that dialed in for a week or two before we like jump up to like, I'm going to be doing speed training 3 days a week. I'm going to be doing gym work 4 days a week. I'm going to add in mobility on my off days. Like, I think building up slowly is really important. And a lot of people get eager and they jump into it. And the second pitfall is once they see that success, they get that big jump in speed, they hammer down on it more and more and more. I'm going to do more and more speed training swings, trying to get that number to go up. So a lot of it is setting expectations of let's start slow and build up. And I also want a way to always kind of make sure that it's having the effect I want. And so that could be that when you're at the range, let's take 10, 20 swings and try to make sure that when I try to put a quality strike on it, that I'm still able to do that, or have sessions built in throughout the week where it's, okay, this is our day to kind of like work on a functional golf swing, not just hammer away at speed. So having ways to kind of monitor that what you're doing is having the effect you want is really beneficial, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think what you said about starting small and building the habits so important, because, I mean, it can be anything. It's like you want to lose weight, whatever you want to get better at. Like, people get excited about it, and then if they do too much, they get overwhelmed and the excitement wanes and they never really build that habit. So I love what you said about starting small. More importantly, like, they probably won't get hurt either. If you're too eager, you could do some damage to your body if you go from 0 to 100 too quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And in kind of the fitness world, a very common occurrence is that a person works out for the first time and they go all at it. And of course, they're going to be incredibly sore, can't walk the next day. And then of course, like, what are the chances they're going to want to go back and do that again? It's your body adapts quick, but you still have to make it through those initial kind of weeks where you're you're doing something completely new and your body's going to have to adjust to that. So starting slow and working up from there.
I lived that with leg day for years. It took me so long to get past the initial like micro tears of lifting my lower body. And I finally like stuck with it the last few years, but I probably started and stopped that process five different times and never got through it. It sucks. So where do you think this is all going? It sounds like, you know, we have a decent understanding of what's creating speed. And definitely you could see the younger players taking advantage of this. Like the junior players know that if I want to play D1 golf, I better be able to swing at 120 plus or even play professional golf. Now it's like a few years ago, it was like, you better have 170 ball speed. Now it's like, you better have 180 ball speed to like make it on the tours. But where do you think this is going? Like, what's your big prediction over the next like 5 years on our understanding of it and training methods? Do you think they'll change much?
I mean, I think every young competitive golfer, maybe not everyone, but a lot of them, it's just going to be standard practice that, you know, training for speed is going to be some component of like a development plan for most competitive golfers, or at least they're going to pay more attention to it. Maybe if someone's already pretty quick, they don't put quite as much emphasis on it. But what I hope is that I don't think it's going away. I think people are going to be doing it for a long time, regardless of equipment changes. Speed is always going to be an advantage if you're able to do it. It's all relative to your playing competitors. If you can swing faster and hit it further than the other players, that can be an advantage. What I'm hoping happens is that it, like as we kind of mentioned, that it becomes a bit more systematic of where all these pieces fit together. And that applies to the gym side of things. I think an important piece is like with young golfers developing, we need to think long term when we're thinking about developing players. We often think what's going to get me speed in the short term. But with a young golfer, I want to expose them to a really good foundation of different movements, different sports. Even if they specialize in golf, we talk about early specialization. A lot of golfers are going to pick to play golf and that's what they want to do. But making sure they can do other things if they wanted to, I think is important. That's a really valuable time period for just like learning to move, not just for speed, not just for generating force, but like when they work with a golf coach and they want to be able to move. Or I've even heard given analogies of you want to like having them think about another kind of movement pattern. If you have that background, it's a little easier to kind of go into your brain and say, okay, I kind of know how to get into that position. And then over time, it's going to be, how can we work in the speed training where it's not going to be interrupting with what they're trying to do from a functional standpoint on the course. And then a massive piece is going to be making sure it doesn't lead to more injuries. I don't think it has to be a guarantee that there's going to be more injuries if people are swinging faster, but you do have to respect the fact that speed is going to add load to what's happening. So we have to be smart about how we prepare the body for that, but also managing workloads of over time. Like we can't just hammer away at speed training without thinking about if there could be side effects from that.
The last question I would have would just be like maintenance. So I've seen this with like weight training where, you know, you build up to a certain level, you lift for a year or two, you kind of plateau and you don't need to work as hard to stay there. And you'd have to work incredibly hard to gain like 10% more strength. Do you find that if a golfer really was serious about this and spent 6 to 18 months holistically training their swing speed, that they can make that jump? And then they don't have to work as hard maybe for the next few years if they just kind of do a maintenance thing where they're not working as hard, but they can stick to where they are rather than lose it all. How does that work?
Yeah, I don't know if we have a whole lot of like long-term data collection on that side.
Okay, so we're still going to figure that out.
Yeah, but I'd suspect, I mean, what we know about how the body adapts to other stressors, I'd imagine that probably is the case. With strength training, one of the things that I've started working into programs I write for like golfers or for like myself is at certain periods, I'm going to tone down on strength training, focus on more high velocity work and save more of the energy and resources towards speed training or towards competitive play. And that doesn't mean I stop doing it altogether, but most people would be surprised that once you've built up physical capability, that it takes much less volume. If the intensity is still there from time to time, that you can still maintain a lot of that at a very high level. And my experience is probably judging by how quickly my speed bounced back after pretty much 5 years of very minimal time swinging a golf club. I'd imagine there's probably something to that, that if you just added in a bit of speed every once in a while, if they built up of where they're kind of want to be through the season, for example, they could probably mix in 5, 10, maximum 10 balls at the end of a practice session once or twice a week. And I'd imagine that'd do a pretty good job of maintaining it.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think I maxed out probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago and kind of have maintained where I am just with, you know, the strength training. I haven't been able to do the speed stuff as much, but I think that's fair for most people. Cause I think a lot of people, they're like, well, it's like also like with weight loss, it's like, you know, I don't want to stop and then gain my 30 pounds back. And in this instance, I don't want to get to 110 miles an hour and then go all the way back to 100. But I think you can keep a lot of it through maintenance, but I'm sure that depends on the person. Alex, first of all, do you work with a lot of, because every time we have someone on the sweet spot, they'll probably be flooded with emails and stuff. Do you have an opportunity to work with golfers?
I try to when time allows. So I kind of take that on a case-by-case basis. I may try to build out more of a structure for that this year. At the very least, I'm happy to help people when I have the time, but from time to time, as time allows, and then a big piece is I'm trying to build out an educational platform this year to try to get some of my thoughts on training, speed training across in maybe more detailed and cohesive form. So hopefully this year.
Where can everyone find you online? Where's the best spot?
Twitter, X, and Instagram. I'm both of those. I'm off the top of my head. I struggle to remember my own accounts on Twitter. I think it's something like Alex M. Alert on Twitter, and then something similar, Alex Saylor, PhD or something on Instagram. So I'm usually fairly responsive when I have the time on there if people want to message or have a chat.
All right, cool. We'll throw it in the show notes. We'll appreciate the time, the knowledge. Hopefully everyone learned something new or reinforced something you might have already known about swing speed. But yeah, I think my closing statement would be is it's a skill. You don't need to go crazy on it. Like you don't need to go crazy on putting speed control all the time. Like if you work on it a bit, you'll see some gains. And as you've heard on the show with strokes gained, your scores will probably drop if you at swing speed. It's a pretty good predictor. So it's something you could work towards. And I think it's an awesome health thing too, because you're going to get a lot of other health side benefits. So that's my endorsement for it. Adam, where can everyone find your stuff?
If you want to help your speed transfer to the actual golf ball being there, as we talked about earlier, skill training helps being able to strike different parts of the face. And if you want to launch it like Albert Einstein to get more miles per hour out of your driver, I think I get about 2.6 yards of carry per mile an hour, then both of those things can be helped with the strike plan at adamyounggolf.com. And John, where can people find you and your stuff?
You can check out my books, The Four Foundations of Golf, and my new book, The Foundations of Winning Golf. Thanks to everyone for listening to us, your questions, your feedback, and we will see you next time with a new episode.